Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, former director of the CIA, General Michael Hayden, and the author of Just the Funny Parts, Nell Scovell. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a review of Avengers Infinity War in Hooray for Bollywood. And now, next year's entertainment for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Adam Carolla.
Yeah. Dust off that unicycle, bitch.
Please.
It's all prop comedy from now on. Get it on, man. Got to get it on. No choice but the on, man. Thanks for tuning in. And again, thanks for sharing. We see us down at Road Atlanta at the race. You guys coming up with your wives and your friends and your kids and turning everyone on to the podcast. And that's how we do it. So just take a moment today. Think about somebody who might enjoy this podcast and tell them all about it. And just shove it in their phone, man. Good day and good birthday, Gina Grad.
Thank you very much.
And Bald Brian.
I hated you.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I never said that.
Lot of thoughts. A lot of thoughts about things.
May I interrupt, just use my birthday power for a second, just interrupt really quickly. Mm-hmm. I want to thank Brian so much. He is
the flowers are not for me.
Smug as he is. Thank you all you gentlemen for the flowers. Brian made a wonderful donation to a charity I love, A Walk on Water, yesterday, and it meant a lot to me. Thank
I have to
you.
Lower my tax liability, and it seemed like a very good opportunity.
It's surf therapy for kids with special needs. I really appreciate it.
It's a great cause. Everyone should donate.
And I really want to thank the donations have been pouring in.
You said surf therapy.
Surf therapy. So kids who are nonverbal, kids who are paraplegic, quadriplegic, have all range of issues. These really cool surfer dudes get them up on surfboards. And some of them become verbal and they come to life. And it's really amazing.
I think a couple things. I want to thank Books for this half of the show. Enter Adam. Get 15% off. Tell you more about that. Castrol. Tweet us your car question and a True Car. Go buy a car and then tweet us your car question. Buy that car with True Car. Use the app.
They do it for veterans as well, I believe.
I have always, but only of World War II. So a lot of those guys out there with bad hips and blurry vision. No, I've always tried to. God damn it, I know everything. I've been telling Drew for 20 years, like, connect the physical to the emotional. Get in the boxing ring. Move around.
Surf.
Get on your feet. Go do something. You know what I mean? You need that. And it was all about like therapy and Ritalin and more prescription stuff and then more therapy and more talk and more this. And I was like, or you could just go take a run with a dog, you know? And like, we need it. We're humans. It's part of, it's in our DNA. And we out-scienced ourselves. We out-scienced ourselves with, you know, we have always talked about, you know, all the overhydration and the six small meals and the carbs and all this stuff. It's all wrong. We need to eat meat. We eat once a day. We drink water when we're thirsty. And getting up on that, and the ocean has a magical siren song over all who live on this planet. There's nobody who's not in a better mood when they see the ocean. Nope. There's nobody who's not in a better mood when they take a hike through a beautiful forest. Yep. So why is everything coming in a pill? And of course, if you get these kids sort of literally on their feet on the surfboard and achieving and interacting and reacting and dealing with the highs and the lows, of course that's going to have a huge emotional impact. That's something that's sitting with a therapist in Sherman Oaks in an office building with some pills could never achieve. Yeah. And it could go no other way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a great organization. And when I mentioned the YOLO Tango program here the other day for the Children's Hospital, I got people from fans of this show, fans
YOLO,
of
YOLO, man. YOLO Tango.
They're pouring in. We still need more. You can contact me at Gina Grad on Twitter, gina@adamcarolla.com. Thank you, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right, it's enough thank you.
Yeah. Enough of the positive. On with the show.
I had I had a couple of thoughts. First, you know, in my never-ending profile, my never-ending quest of profiling. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I enjoy my co-host, Matt DeAndrea, from CarCast so much is because all he did from age 13 to age 19 was Civil Air Patrol, ROTC, drill, drill, drill. They literally drilled. Like they entered competitions where they drilled. He flew small aircraft. And nothing falls between the cracks with him. He has no excuses. There are no excuses in the military. There's someone a rank above you. They tell you what you do. You do it. And that's it. And I think people think of that as, oh, how unfair or how boring or how whatever. It's just how you get things done. Mm-hmm. And so he's just a guy who's on top of his game. And he's easy. Look, I went to Europe with Donnie and my buddy Chris once. And we were there for like 10 days. And the entire trip was basically this, trains leaving at noon. It's 9:45. We got to get ready and get packed and get to the train station. It would be me walking into their part of the hotel room we're in and going, hey, you guys got to get up. We're going. We got to make the train. We're going to Le Mans. We got to pack and take everything, too. And there could be a security line or something like that. Of course, they didn't have their alarm set or anything of that nature. And then I'd go, all right, I'm going to go downstairs and get some coffee. And then I'd come back up and they'd still be sleeping. And it's the biggest goddamn pain in the ass because you have to be the fucking den mom for everybody.
You're the human alarm clock.
Like you're like constantly, like, hey, come on, get
honey.
Up. And then they're such assholes that they're always like, they go, come on, man. And they're like pissed at you.
But the worst part is about that group dynamic, that specific one is once you... It's a silent, tacit agreement that everyone falls into where once you designate yourself the human alarm clock, like I'm the keeper of the time or I'm the one that's going to make sure that we know about they rely on that. That's an unspoken thing where it's like, all right, coming around.
And they also hate you for it.
Yeah. And they hate you. And then you can explain to them, look, the train's leaving it, whatever. We got to get going. And you literally go in the bathroom and take a shower and come out and they're both still asleep. And it's like, Jesus, goddamn Christ. It's so... absurdly selfish to go through life that way. It's like the people that are just constantly late and constantly whatever, but fine. Fuck it. Ruin your life and then ruin those around your life, although people stop hanging out as much.
Say, self-defeat.
Eventually. But I like Matt DeAndrea because the guy's just packed, ready to go. Whatever time you tell him, that's the time he's there. He's just that guy. And so we were upstairs sharing a bathroom. He had a room with an air mattress with a slow leak in it first night, and it just tacoed around him. So much so that he couldn't get out of it. But because we were where we were in Georgia, of course, a neighbor the next night just lent him an air mattress that didn't leak. I couldn't imagine going to the super cunt who lives across the street from me and borrowing anything. But either way... they got the mattress from the friendly neighbor across the street because it's Georgia. They're all backwards over there. They just sort of have a focus on family and country and neighbors and stuff. They like their neighbors.
Do you have an air mattress we can borrow?
Yeah. So that was that. So we got things. Now, I go into the bathroom that we're sharing Sunday morning, and I am... get my stuff together, brush my teeth. We're going to pack it up, throw everything in the car. We're going to have everything in the car. So when we get to the track, we're all packed. And then we'll leave the track for the airport after the last race. Goes off at 2:35 on Sunday afternoon. I'm in the bathroom and I'm horrified because I look down and I see his toothpaste, the kind with the flip cap, and the cap is flipped open. And he's already brushed his teeth, gotten dressed, and is in the next room.
Oh, something doesn't add up.
And I'm like, whoa, what happened? This is not Matt. Like, this is not him.
He never heard a second cup of coffee at home.
And I'm like, I'm seriously bummed. He and I are sharing this upstairs bathroom. We're staying upstairs. Tom's downstairs on the sofa. We're upstairs sharing the bathroom. Tom's got his own bathroom down there. And his toothpaste, and not only is the cap off it, it's the flip variety, which I've always said, whether it's ketchup, the squeeze mayonnaise, or the toothpaste, whoever invented that technology in 1989 went, well, never again will a toothpaste become crusty or dried up, and never again.
Well, that solves that problem. Yep.
Oh, you have no idea how lazy and out of it we are and how little we care, because I see the squeeze ketchup with the cap
with the
flipped
up
and the crust all over it all the time. And I looked at that toothpaste and I went, God damn, Matt left the toothpaste open.
You think you know someone.
How the mighty have fallen.
And I walked into the room and I said, Matt, I hope you should sit down. I don't know where this puts us. Like, I'm reeling right now. I'm like the girlfriend who just picked up the guy's phone and seeing all the sexting messages from the strumpets spread out all over town. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's in there making stir fry in the kitchen with his shirt off going, what can I do for her, hon? And I'm like, going, oh my God.
Your world's upside down.
Oh my God. My God. So I was like, we both, you know, we need to sit down on the bed and we need to talk. I said, I just left the bathroom and your toothpaste was out.
Is there something you want to tell me?
And the flip top was open. And he said, huh? And then Tom walked in the room and he went, that's my toothpaste. And I went, perfect.
There it is.
Now it's perfect because Tom, this I expect. And then I said, Tom, why do you leave the toothpaste open? And he goes, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Of course not. I don't know. Didn't
what,
even notice,
I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know what goes on. And I'm like, but is there a part of your mind that says, like, shut it? And he's like, I don't know. And then I
obviously hearken
back to us having a cordless drill with no battery in it at the track, not packed. And I thought, yep.
Makes sense.
Now we're back.
I really do hope you gave Matt the apology he deserved.
His apology was the ultimate apology, which is I could not wrap my head around you leaving the cap open on your tube. Now, you're not on your home turf. You're on someone else's soil. You're having to get to the track. There are multiple things going on, but I knew it was impossible for him. And when Tom told me it was him, I was like, that is perfect.
We're back.
We're right back. That is perfect for you. Yeah. And, now, no one ever seems to care that that's them. They look at it as a sort of novelty, but it should be looked into because it's usually a broader thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was just limited to toothpaste, that'd be fine.
An indicator.
But it's such a weird. I do such a weird profiling all the time that I can't walk past the thing of toothpaste. And when I found out it was Matt's, I couldn't accept it. And so much so that I don't know who else would have asked. Like, I feel like other people would just say, look, it's his toothpaste, and the only other toothpaste in there is me and his, and mine's done, and we're sharing a bathroom. It was his. That's what he chose. But I felt very, very strongly about bringing it up to him. And
good thing you did.
Yes. And then everybody, when the other person's name comes up and everyone goes, oh, yeah, perfect, we're back, don't have that be you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh, don't be the guy that
left the tray of lasagna overnight by the sink and didn't soak it and let all the cheese and marinara dry up. And now we have to go at it with an orbital sander. And so Brian would never do that. Yeah. And then and you go, oh, it wasn't Brian. It was Steve. Oh, Steve. Yeah, sure. He's the guy who would do that. Don't have you be that guy.
Yeah. No,
you don't have everyone go, oh, yeah, that's that guy.
No, you want to be the guy who's built up years of equity where it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I have years of evidence that supports.
That's
he wouldn't
right.
be that person.
That's right.
It's
all
not
right.
cute. Everyone thinks it's being cute.
It stops being quirky.
Yeah.
It is funny when you talk to most people about that part of their life, they just laugh their ass off.
They think
which
it's
is
adorable.
A weird thing to do. But all right. I like
how's Tom. The stir fry.
I just knew that couldn't be Matt. I will tell you about Books.com. Now, there you go. Mother's Day is Books Day. Bouqs. Short for bouquet. These flowers are, they're awesome. We got them. It'll be 2 weeks. I remember we, Olga and I marked the twine. We put them in 2 weeks ago today. I talked to Olga last night, looked at him, and I said, 2 weeks, right? She said, yes. And then they still look fantastic.
Wow.
Haven't had to change them out yet. Moms don't want the online sweatshop flowers that wilt in 2 days. Bouqs are fresh, cut from farms, and they go straight to mom, man. They go straight from the farm to mom. So they last for weeks. Yeah, I'm here to tell you. Ooh, the general's on the phone. Talk to him in a second. The farms are located outside of volcanoes. They produce flowers that are gorgeous, and they are gorgeous. And your mom's going to love it. Books. They cut out the middleman. They save you tons of dough. Order today. Get the extra 15% off when you enter Adam at BOUQS.com. Enter Adam to save 15% at Books.com. Really a superior product. All right. General Michael Hayden is on the phone. I think I got him online, too, right? General?
Hello. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
The book is The Assault on Intelligence, American National Security in an Age of Lies. It's available as we speak on Amazon, and you can bookmark us and click through our site, and it just helps. So perfect timing for this book. And I should tell everybody, let me just brag about you, retired U.S. Air Force four-star general, former director of NSA, former deputy director of National Intelligence, director of the CIA. So you got your bona fides. What's going on in terms of national security and this digital age we're living in?
So, Adam, the way I look at it, and I try to do this without being judgmental, but being descriptive, but nonetheless alarmed. Number one, we are now in what the Oxford Dictionary calls the post-truth world, mm-hmm. a world in which decisions are made on emotion and preference rather than on data. So that's one, and that's a generalized thing. We're seeing it throughout America and other places in the world. Number two, we've got a president who identified that reality, exploited it, and I think makes it darker, makes it worse by what he says and what he does. And then number three, we've got a foreign adversary coming in over the perimeter wire, so to speak, the Russians, taking advantage of one and two to exploit weaknesses and divisions in America to weaken us and to make us lose confidence in ourselves and in our institutions. It's a pretty challenging time.
Well, it's interesting if you sort of look at a nation as a big corporation, and you could get into Nike or Apple and just really screw up their morale, get them fighting amongst each other and really get some one department going at it with another department. Then if you were Adidas or Samsung or something, you'd probably could take advantage of that.
Indeed.
And the Russians wanted to sow chaos here. It seems to me they didn't want him or her. They just wanted chaos. Right. Does that seem right?
Actually, the intelligence judgment, and it's done with high confidence, and so I'm going to repeat it for you, is number one, you're right. Goal number one was to mess with our head. Check. Did that really well. Number two, this is during 2016, Putin wanted to punish Hillary Clinton because he hates her. Number three, and this is all the same activity but shifting motivations, number three, they think she is going to win, so they want to kind of undercut her legitimacy with a lot of stories out there. And then, the judgment of the intel community was that by August or September of election year, they actually began to think this other guy could win, and they began to move in the direction of increasing his vote. But overall, Adam, you've got it right. They wanted to mess with our heads, to erode confidence in our processes, to reduce confidence in our democratic processes, and you got to admit, they did that.
Oh, they did, and it works. All you have to do is turn on any of the news outlets on any of the evenings. And
any time of the day or night. Well, we're still arguing with one another about it.
Yeah, so I had this. So we're in a digital world now, and it used to be an analog world. And so if you were making decisions from a military standpoint, you needed photo observations. You needed information, but you needed like hard information, right? You needed where a battleship, armada of battleships were steaming to, and then they'd have surveillance reconnaissance photos, and right. you needed like numbers of troops and you needed like, it was almost right. analog stuff, like hard stuff, like literally pictures right. you could hold. Now somebody just says something, it catches on, they put it on the internet, somebody grabs it and runs with it, and the next thing you know, it's truth, and then we're firing some Tomahawk missiles somewhere. I mean, is that the danger that there's this? It was analog.
We haven't gotten to that. We haven't gotten to that last step yet, but it is absolutely the danger. So there's a Russian general. He's now chief of the general staff, named Valery Gerasimov, and several years back, he wrote an article that mirrored, Adam, what you just said. Number one, they view themselves to be in a permanent state of conflict with the United States and with the West. That's one. Number two, he began to push forward the theory that the Russians could win in this state of conflict by what he called contactless warfare. In other words, they would use their dominance in the information domain, manipulating how we think, the news we get, manipulating in such a way, and the target of that was the American population, was you and me, that they could actually, without needing to go to the tactical land attack missiles route, they could actually achieve their objectives by influencing how we think about global affairs. Let me give you one example, Adam. I'm sorry to take so long, but
go ahead.
In 2015, the American government was conducting an exercise in Texas and the southwestern states called Jade Helm 15. It's a special operations kind of exercise, fairly routine. Russian botnets, and in this case reinforced by the American alt-right media, Alex Jones, Information Wars, Gateway Pundit, and so on. Russian media and the alt-right media here, Russian bots and the alt-right media, began to play this up as an Obama administration effort to round up opponents to the Obama administration. And that story gained so much currency that the governor of Texas had to actually call out elements of the Texas National Guard to observe the federal exercise to calm the population of the state of Texas. Wow. Talk about information warfare.
Well, you know,
Russians went to school on that and then decided, you know, we might be able to fool around with these guys' election.
Well, is there... So, now that politicians are basically sort of running a popularity contest versus a policies contest on the right and the left, just who wants who? How many NRA members? Okay, good. Who wants more food stamps?
How many people can I collect on myself?
I'm running. I mean, it's literally you're running for class president, and you're going lunch 35 minutes, pshaw, should be an hour and a half, and everyone starts Yay. Cheering, and you go, okay. Now, you're not thinking about how to make the most of the school day or how to right. get the most highest standardized test scores, but you are going to win mm-hmm. with that. And now that everyone just takes the temperature of everything's in the media, then if you can get the media going one direction, the politicians will follow suit. Is that a fair statement?
Adam, that is spot on. In my book, I use an example. Now, it's with the president, all right? But I've got to freely admit there are other people doing this. There was an incident when John Dickerson, who was doing the CBS Sunday morning show, was practically stalking the president during one of those Sunday morning interviews, asking him a question. Mr. President, did Barack Obama really wiretap Trump Tower? Mr. President, what proof do you have? Mr. President, what evidence do you have? And he kept pressing the president. And finally, the president, exasperated, turned around and simply said, look, a lot of people agree with me. A lot of people are saying Barack Obama did that. Adam, do you realize what that just was? It's what you just described. It didn't matter whether or not it happened. We're just going to treat it as true. And that's what I mean in the book about our being in a post-truth, post-fact world in which decision-making is determined by emotion, preference, or popularity, and not by hard reality.
Well, you see stories all the time where it's like unnamed sources say blah, 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 and then it just kind of takes off.
It's gossip.
From there. And then you, later on, when it gets reported on, it's like, hey, it's been reported on. Right. But it all started with an unnamed source. So, yes.
So we've seen that before, okay? We've got a history of that. But it's generally been in print media with limited effect. Now we're doing it in social media, where, you know, where likes accumulate rather quickly and can be manipulated. And now we're creating that dynamic you just described far more deeply and far more often than we ever have before.
Can I ask this about Russia? I've always I like to call them the craziest white people on the planet. Mm-hmm. I can't.
The general like that.
I can't figure out. Well, they are the craziest of white people. I don't have them at the top
of all crazy people.
That's like saying this guy was the fastest white guy in my high school. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly.
It's a kind of a compliment. They're not the craziest, but right. They're the craziest of the white people on the planet. What is there? When does it ever end for them? Like, it starts with the Cold War. It just keeps going. At some point, we get a little relief in the 80s where we think maybe that we can be friends, and then it goes right back to it. The people never seem to flourish. I know these are, like, they sound naive, but they're sort of like just overarching questions. Like, how long can this just go on? What do they get out of us? How does their house get any better out of constantly burning the trash of their neighbor's house?
Right.
Like, why does that make their house seem better? Maybe their people feel a little distracted or better.
They're thriving right now as a result.
But how, thriving in what way? Like, the people are thriving? Like, I don't know.
It's feeling better about themselves.
I guess, but feeling...
Let me take a run at it. That's about the Russian people. Less about the Russian people than it is about the Russian leadership.
Well, that, yes.
What gives Putin his legitimacy? You know, when he was president the first time, it was, hey, I'm going to be autocratic, but don't worry, you're going to be rich. But that was oil at $120 a barrel. And now oil is half that price. And so now the promise Putin is making to the Russian people, I'm still going to be autocratic, but don't worry, you're going to be proud. And so what Putin wants to do is address historic Russian grievances, restore Russian pride. But Adam, you've hit upon a very key point. He doesn't have the horses to do that. This is a relatively poor nation. Do you realize that the gross domestic product of Russia is a fraction of the GDP of the state of California?
And
so he is leading a country that he wants to feel, that he wants to make feel pride in itself. But he's got a country that's poor and relatively weak.
Well,
and
General, we're transitioning to full socialism here, so don't worry. We're going to narrow that gap real quick here. And if the politicians have their say.
In the meantime, what he's doing is exactly what you described. He's not building Russia up. He's trying to tear us down. And so that's why he tries to pour oil on the fire of Brexit. That's why he attacks European unity. He attacks the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Why he attacks democracy in Europe, and why he attacked democracy here. He's trying to pull us down to his level.
So tell me if this is somewhat accurate, this statement or this analogy. I think your average American thinks about your average Russian like your average head cheerleader in high school thinks about your average freshman guy coming in with bad skin. Like they're here.
They don't.
They're around. I might see him in the hall, but they don't
not
have.
Sure.
I'm not. And I never want to date that guy. And I never want to live with him. And I don't want no part of that guy. But I get it. He should be able to go to high school too. And they're looking at us like the prom queen or something. Mm-hmm. Like, we gotta go carry on her ass. Like, we gotta take her down a notch or something. Is that, I don't get why they get so much pleasure out of taking us down a notch when they're still living in little bunkers and driving two stroke cars. Like, what? But does the average Russian think more about us than we think about them?
Actually, that's very true. All right.
I love this guy.
This is a very proud people, all right? And they have reasons to be proud because of a magnificent and rich history. But History has now put them in this place where someone who promises to come and restore their pride, restore their rightful place, actually is allowed to do things that you and I would say, that's just not a good idea for you, let alone for us. And now you've got Putin trying to exploit that. And Adam, let me make it even worse to kind of repeat something that I have in the book, which is I didn't pay enough attention to Russia as director of CIA. I should have been more attentive to the tensions that were building up inside the Russian population and inside the Russian leadership. And so our intelligence agencies, I think, and I'm bearing some responsibility for this, we weren't quick enough to identify that the Russians would be coming at us in the way they have come at us in the last couple of years.
How do you think the whole North Korea-South Korea thing is going to end up? And then what does it mean that it's happened so quickly?
So a couple of thoughts. Number one, it seems dramatic, but you know, we've been here three times before in terms of we're going to promise this, they're going to promise that, and we all know how that worked out. So I want to be hopeful, but let's not be giddy about this. And so what I'm suggesting might be the best possible outcome, that President Kim and President Trump meet, they smile for the cameras, they don't yell at one another, and then they set in motion a very long-term, arduous, difficult diplomatic process that might lead to a safer situation in Korea over a long period of time. And frankly, I think that's the best news story I can come up with. All the other possible options are worse.
So I've always had this theory, which is all these horrible characters we talk to and we talk about abroad, who are leaders of these nations, I think they're sort of nutty. I think they're bullies. And I think they're scared of bullies and scared of nutty. Mm. And I think when they see our politicians are generally pretty measured. Obama was an insanely measured guy. Everything he said sounded perfect and measured. And they don't look at that as threatening. And I think they look at Trump is sort of nuts, cowboy, possible bully, and that strikes some fear into them that this guy's erratic and could do something, or is this all just some sort of orchestrated setup thing to make Trump look good?
So I'll give credit to the president, not for the rhetoric, all right, because I actually think the rhetoric narrowed the margin for error, and I'm glad we're by that now, and he's not doing it anymore. I mean, you know, Kim Jong-un, you know, he didn't go to the Georgetown School of Foreign Service, all right? And so if you and I are having trouble figuring out what the latest presidential tweet means, imagine what it must mean for Kim. So I was concerned about all the rhetoric going back and forth. But give credit to the Trump administration for the sanctions, the diplomatic isolation, for the military demonstrations in and around the Korean Peninsula. I think those are the things that Kim paid attention to, not the rocket man kind of language.
But the message that the status quo is no good anymore. Mm. We're not going to just hang back and not get into it.
I get it.
We're going to change things. And I don't think bullies like that.
And that is... Frankly, I think any administration right now would have to have that view you just described, because President Obama's strategic patience was leading us to a place that was looking really bad. And so credit to the Trump guys for all those things I said they did to amp up the pressure. I'm still a little uncomfortable with the tweets.
Everyone's well uncomfortable with the tweets. But I say, one day we're going to miss the tweets. When they're gone, you'll miss them when we're gone. So last question, is our news outlets, are they guilty of playing into the hands of Russia, both sides, right and left? And what could they do and or what is their moral obligation to not sort of dive on the low hanging fruit and raise the game or this sort of instant gratification right. of, oh, there's another Russia thing and and we're doing exactly, they have to, if we'd asked any of them and said, how did the whole, Russia chaos, fake news, how'd that work? It'd be A+. It'd be 110%. We went for all of it and we never stopped. How much of this lands in the lap of news agencies and what could they do?
There's a lot of guilt to go around here. So, candidate Trump during the last 30 days of the campaign called attention to WikiLeaks 162 times. And so he's playing into the hands of the Russians, too, because WikiLeaks is acting as an agent of the Russian Federation. Now, to your point, American news picked up on all those stories and played them as well. So they inadvertently, as a byproduct, became a transmission belt for the things the Russians wanted to push into our information space. And so looking back on it, I think a fair criticism would have been, okay, you got to report the news. That's in the just-released stolen email. But you may also be wanting to report on how the Russians are trying to mess with our heads, too, and how this is part of that grand scheme that's underway. So I get your point. The news, Facebook, and a whole bunch of other things may have been should have been a bit more sensitive to how they were being exploited by the Russians' information campaign.
Is this a fair statement that the Russians, when we say are hacking the election, they're not technically hacking the election, they're hacking our heads.
Yeah, not the voting.
And then we go out and hack the election. That's the plan, to get into people's heads, and then we go out, but they're not hacking or digitally altering or any of that, or is there some of that going on, or may some of that be planned in the future?
That is, we have no evidence that that has gone on. We need to be always on guard to make sure that did not happen. But that doesn't mean the Russians aren't having an effect on our political processes. They're doing it just the way you described, Adam. They're using a bank shot, and rather than manipulating the vote, they're manipulating you and me by interfering in our social media and information space with their botnets and their news broadcasts from RT and Sputnik. And, based upon the last indictments from Director Mueller, by sending people to the United States to actually affect our political discussions.
Brian has a question.
Follow-up question for you, General. Then if obviously everything you're saying, Russia is an adversary of the United States and every action they're doing to this point is to affect us in a negative way. They are, I guess, short of an enemy, but an adversary. Why then is the rhetoric out of the White House, oh, wouldn't it be great if we were friends with them? Wouldn't it be great if we were friends with Putin? Why are those so at odds?
I can't explain it.
Thank you very much. Very exactly what I was hoping for. That's insane. Why? All the evidence is, like you say, Adam, there's evidence and there's feelings. The evidence is this is an enemy. They are trying to defeat us. And the feeling is, hey, let's be friends.
Well, and the more it's pointed out, the more we turn on ourselves.
This is madness.
No, I agree. But he's doing the same thing with Kim Jong and whatever, which is like, let's have a chat. I mean, they're the enemy.
An enemy at the gates, and there's an ostensible enemy, an enemy that like could someday be something, and there's an enemy that is trying to kick down our doors.
Well, I don't know. I agree that Russia's evil and it's not looking for the best for us, but they're not testing rockets and missiles and stuff.
Like, right, they're both, I guess just pick your poison.
They're both equally, well, not equally. They're both horrible. Mm. Let's say, I assume the plan. I mean, it's always kind of been the plan. I mean, Reagan called him an evil empire and everyone jumped down his throat. Mm. I think the diplomatic plan is to pretend like, okay, well, let's talk and let's see what we can hash out and then hopefully either not follow up with it or do something. I don't know. I don't know how. I think Trump's thing is he's going to tell everyone, let's go to eat. and let's go out to eat and let's talk. And then when it doesn't come out the way he wants it to come out, then we'll hear different talk. Okay. I'm assuming. I don't know. General?
Oh, Adam, you just used an interesting phrase. You just said the diplomatic plan, okay? And I've said this in other venues, so let me just repeat it for you. You know what I want to hear from the president? I want to hear a sentence that begins with, "Our relationship with the Russian Federation will be governed by the following three principles." Two principles. One principle. I'm easy. But I've never heard that. All I hear is, wouldn't it be great if we got along? Actually, getting along is not an objective. Changing Russia's
face
is an objective.
It'd be nice to change them. Right. But what do we want, and we want to change North Korea as well. By the way, your statement of what everyone wants to hear from the president is, I feel a tingling sensation in my right arm. I think I should sit down. All right, General Michael Hayden is his name. The assault on intelligence, American national security in an age of lies. Incredible time we're living in. Thank you so much, General.
Okay, thank you.
When Trump lets you out of military prison, when he lets you out of stockade, you can come say hi to us in person.
Will do.
Thank you, man. Available on Amazon.
Very jovial.
Yeah, nice guy.
The prospect of the coordination.
Optimistic.
What a time we're living in, everybody. All right, let's see. We got our guest here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get so excited.
That's all right.
Oh, it's an excitable subject.
It's an excitable subject. No, I think everyone's, I don't know. I don't know. Everyone's policy. I'm trying to think of who. Look, everyone's evil, or many people are evil. I don't hear a lot of people calling out evil.
I agree,
and they should. And I think it's effective. Like I think when Reagan went, it's evil. Tear down this wall. Mm-hmm. Now my mom went, oh my God, how dare you say that? But I was like, yeah, he is evil. Why doesn't he tear down the wall? And it worked. Mm-hmm. So I agree. More of that, because I think these guys,
the Putins of the world,
and the Rocket Mans and all those guys, all they want is time. Like they're basically like a syndicate. They're crime syndicate, whether it's the Mexican drug cartels or the Black Widow over there in Cocaine Cowboys.
Esmeralda.
Yeah, she's a delight. Or the Mafia. All they want us is, all they want is no action for as long as they can possibly have no action. So, you know, the cops go, we should go in there and raid their establishment. And then someone else goes, well, wait, we got to get a judge to sign off on a warrant. And then the judge, then a new politician comes in and goes, you can't just, and that's all they want. They just want as much time to do what they're doing as they can possibly do it. And certain politicians who are much more into diplomacy, they just hang back and go, you got all the time you need. And I don't think that works with them. I think it's better to go, here's what's going on. Like the general was talking. Now, I don't know what you do with Russia, but with Rocket Man, you do some sanctions, you cut some stuff off, you send your fleet out there to hang out in their koi pond. And all of a sudden, that time that they always had, that sort of infinite amount of time is now starting to shrink down. So I guess, now I don't know if you can do that with Russia. I don't know how that works.
But how come every time on either side, everyone points at the truth and, you know, holds a flashlight, people turn on the person holding the flashlight and not at what they're pointing at? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Why is that? Because if we united again, that is a way to stop fake news and whatever.
It gets back to a core element of what's gone on in this country for like the last 40 years, which is you can't judge. And it's like,
we could use some judging.
I think we can judge. Well, I think we can judge. There's been a simultaneous, every time somebody says in this country, you see on the news, whatever, you go, somebody's got to stop this radical Islam from blowing. Oh, what about the Crusades? What about the Crusades?
Huh? You're right about
they killed so many people in the Crusades in the 1680s or 20. Whatever. It's like
point taken.
So all we do is we're no better. We're no better, and you can't judge. And that's that's basically, that's whiskey dick for your country. That's just boom. No boner.
Well played.
No nothing. That's
your next book.
Well, I mean, it's like World War II breaks out and we go, we got to go over there and do something. But what if there's a whole bunch of people going, you know, we're not much better. What about the Trail of Tears?
That's right.
Next thing you know, it's like, yeah, I guess we're not any better.
Yeah.
And
good luck,
now,
Poland.
Yeah, it's just, it's stifling. Mm. Anyway, I'll tell you about Casserole Edge. Oh, you can tweet us a question at hashtag Casserole Challenge with your questions about casserole and your car questions. Formulated with fluid titanium technology, reduces friction, maximizes engine performance. 3 times stronger, fool.
3 times, fool.
Against viscosity breakdown, leading full synthetic. We got Gabe in there. Recently got yet another flat tire. White Jaguar.
Yes.
What's going on, man?
All right. My question is hashtag Casserole Challenge. How do I change a tire?
I got a first.
Timely.
The tire has to want to change.
Yeah.
That's true.
Gabe, quick timeline question. When I landed on Sunday night at LAX about 9, let's say 15 or so, got a text saying Gabe had a flat tire. Yeah, in my car.
Yes.
About 30, 40 minutes away.
Yes.
Why 30, 40 minutes away when we landed?
How long have you been hanging out with that
tire?
How
long have you been hanging out with the tire?
Probably about a good 20, 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I heard some tale of Waze taking you to the wrong direction.
Well, that was on me. I hit the wrong address and then realized it and changed the address. So that was my mistake.
Oh, LAX.
LAX?
Not the strip club, LAX.
How far out of your way do you think you're going?
I'm not sure.
Where were you coming from and then where were you heading? Hey, everybody. You like a guy's handy with tools? Or you just want a tool to come in handy, use some money. His name is Gabe. He's got 3 goods in a flat. J7. Sorry. Where were you? What direction?
I was going south, so I was going way out of the way. South on the 5. I was going far out of the way.
I feel like I'm not great with directions, but LAX is one of those places where you just kind of can point, like, hey, that's LAX.
It's his first week in LA.
Direction.
Give him a break. He's only been here for a week.
How long have you lived in L.A.?
My entire life.
Oh, no.
I didn't know that.
Why did you punch into Waze that said go the other way?
On Waze, you can have like a recent search and I accidentally hit my my girlfriend's house. So it was taking me south.
This is the best day.
He's a girl in Roxy.
You had a Pez dispenser filled with peyote that you'd been sucking on all day. Like, don't you guys feel like if it's at LAX and it went, just go up to Foothill and turn right and then head out to Arcadia, I'd be like,
that's
not, but I do have a girlfriend in Arcadia. Maybe they knew she had a car with 4 tires at work.
Waze knew that.
Is it safe to say that we probably could have avoided this whole thing? So, if you didn't get the flat, well, how did you catch on that you were going the wrong direction?
I was just like, this is not the right way. And then I was going to pull over to check the tire anyway because the car felt weird.
Okay. All right. You know, I like to say if this were war, we'd all be dead.
Mm-hmm. The generals on the line.
I stand by that that statement. All right. So we can all fantasize that you would have been on time anyway.
Maybe, but the flat tire.
Just say yes.
Right,
just say yes.
Definitely go with a yes.
And no suspicion, red flags went up when you were heading to your girlfriend's house from your house.
Didn't know and she lived by the airport.
Like, not the direction of the airport.
It just, I was like, this is not the right way. Like, why would Waze take me this way?
Right. But that's the kind of thing one might have backing out of one's driveway, not well on your way to the girlfriend's house.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I don't know.
So
I don't know
if I blame
the video games or the parents. Someone's got to be blamed.
Yes.
Tires. Familiarize.
Don't forget his question.
Familiarize yourself. Pop the trunk and take just a general survey of where that tire is. Pull that little cardboard that's got the little indoor-outdoor carpet on it and see how the tire's held down. See where the general tools are. And the car also, there will be a checkpoint, as we like to say, on the car where the jack goes. See if you can get down on one knee and see if you can kind of find it in the front and the back of the car.
Okay.
And then, Tip, go ahead and break loose those lug nuts. Don't take them all the way off. Just break them to the so that you can kind of turn them by hand. Then jack the car up. Sometimes you jack the car up, put the lug wrench on it, start it, the tire, whole tire turns.
Oh, makes sense.
So you know how they can be tough at the beginning? Yeah. Put them down on the ground where you can like step on it and push your weight on and stuff. Just get them all broken, broken loose, and then jack the car, and then it's much easier to do it.
That's a good tip.
Then tighten them all up and drop it down and torque them down. And when you torque them down, let's say you have five lugs, pretend it's a star, go from one and then go furthest away.
And then go furthest away.
You don't want to do them all around in a circle and in order to pull the rim that direction. All right.
There it is.
There you go. All right. So,
come to a month from now and Gabe's telling the AAA guy, you should go in a star direction and you get him loose first.
Find the torque point.
$120 cab ride, everybody. all right. Let's see. We got the movie. Let's talk about Operation Jules Dash. Nell, our guest is here. Let me see if we can get through this. Robert, 35, Rose Hills.
Yes. Hello, Adam.
Yes.
Eastman.
Yes.
I love all your products, and I just purchased the Adam Carolla Show in 360 VR, available on podcast.one.
The live
Fantastic.
Show.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Yes, the live show. That was excellent. And so, you know, you've talked about how your products aren't getting into the film festivals, and that's because they know the products are from you. So isn't it time
That's my theory. Yes.
Isn't it time we engage in Operation Jules Dash, where you hire somebody else to go in and say that your next product was made by this person that is not related to you in any way, and see if it gets in, and you could do a side documentary as a social experiment to see how your products now get into all these film festivals, and you can have various people, and I propose that strange guy from the back that scrapes the cheese off a pizza as the first Jules Dash.
Brian. Yeah.
What?
Will Brian eat it, Brian?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, I don't do that. Yeah.
You know, with our latest uppity, we have some interest from Showtime to possibly do a series on it. And we have some interest from Ice Cube's people to do a feature on it. So I think we're just going to go do it ourselves, it seems to be, because waiting for the process, it'll be the podcast version of making movies. The process of the film festivals and the waiting and the vetting just seems like one more thing to wait for someone else to do, and it doesn't seem to work out. So, but I appreciate it. And if I did have the time, I am convinced that I could, in fact, create a character called Jules Dash, and I could make him the toast of Tribeca with a movie that I made.
The indie circuit.
Yes.
This is like My Fair Lady in reverse, though. You know
what
I mean?
It's
what
it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah. I look at it more as breakfast at Jules Dash's house.
Right.
Okay. But thank you.
Thank you,
Rob.
Thanks.
All right. Let's do a quickie break, come back with Baldywood, and then we'll bring our guests in.
Hooray for Baldywood! He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen up on the big screen or in his Netflix queue. Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Baldywood!
Avengers Infinity War is in theaters now. Debuted at number one at the box office with $250 million on its opening weekend.
Black folk. Yeah. I mean, you guys, you had a decent run.
Black Panther's in the movie, but yeah.
Whitey's back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah,
and in a sleeper time of year, too, right? It's not like a summer blockbuster.
It is. Well, that's interesting you mentioned that. So summer creeps for kind of like Christmas. You know what I mean? Like you see the Christmas
right
decorations.
After Labor Day.
Going up in like mid-November. Yeah. Like I'll see that quite commonly now, which would have been shocking to me 15, 20 years ago as a kid or whatever. But like now, you see it creeping forward and forward. And the same thing with summer movies. Like summer movies, like it wasn't that long ago that like all of a sudden Memorial Day was the summer movie, right? Even though summer doesn't start till whatever, June. But like, oh no, Memorial Day. Now it's early May or late April when the summer kicks off. And this being probably being the biggest film of the summer. So the summer movie season is underway with Avengers Infinity War. Adam, have you seen a single of the Marvel movies, any Spider-Mans or any you saw Iron Man, of course, any of the other Captain Americas, Thor, Hulk, any of that stuff?
I think I saw the first Thor. I saw Iron Man, which I enjoyed quite a bit, and the second one, which I probably didn't enjoy as much. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the first one quite a bit. And I've seen a handful of these movies.
I saw Iron Man as well, and I think that kicked off the whole thing, the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'll talk more about that in a second. But this is the culmination of all of those films, over a decade's worth of films. This is where it all culminates. Directed by Anthony and Joseph Russo, brings together every character from that universe, A-list actors. I won't bother naming them all because they're so every character that's made an appearance in those movies makes an appearance here. Quick plot rundown. There's six Infinity Stones, and these stones, they've been referenced and or featured throughout the series so far in various forms, some important, some not so important, but if anyone ever collected all of these stones, right, they would be all powerful, essentially a god. And there's this new bad guy, Thanos. Now, easy nerds, I know Thanos has made a few brief appearances before, but he's the new bad guy. He's the antagonist of this movie, voiced by Josh Brolin, and he's power mad. He has two Infinity Stones. He wants them all, and he will stop at nothing. He'll go to any quarter of the universe to get them. And
so he's like me with Newman race cars.
Yeah, he'll stop at nothing to accumulate all of them.
Only less obsessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at the expense of his family. Right. Literally, the expense of his... I'm talking about Thanos now.
Oh, okay.
At the expense of his family, at the expense of, you know, everything else. He's determined.
Yeah.
And he will get these six Infinity Stones. It's up to our heroes, all the heroes, it turns out, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is quietly a very difficult filmmaking task because you have to forget just the obvious juggling of all these characters and storylines and backstories, and you have to make it interesting. You know, you have to make it a good movie. Right.
But, yeah. My first blush with movies like this is it's like the Meat Lover's Pizza. It's like, what do you like in your pizza? I like meatball. Well, you're in luck because we got meatball and we got bacon and we got ham and we got Canadian bacon. And it's like, no, I'm not in luck
because
that feels too much. Now feels like too much. I like to kind of focus a little. I liked Iron Man because it's sort of about Iron Man, but my mind's open.
They've pinned themselves into a bit of a corner because they have to include everyone in this movie. This is the culmination. This is where it's all leading. All these storylines, all these movies, all the Thors and the Iron Mans of the world are all leading to this point. And here they are. And on top of that, there's...
Can I say this quickly? Mm-hmm. I just never thought about it. Never before have actors been more judgmental sacks of shit douchebags and whores simultaneously.
Wow.
Like
the
in the past, they didn't do a bunch of superhero movies, but they kept their yap shut.
Right.
Now they have to blow hard about everything on the planet, and yet they're all in for fucking payday.
It's called the Mark Ruffalo effect.
I guess it is. Like,
no one's louder and no one's in more of these movies than Mark Ruffalo.
Let me just get out of the spandex so I can go fucking lecture everyone on how to live.
So you have that issue, which is just a sheer volume of people and characters and stories to take care of. But also, there's a real tone shift between Black Panther and, say, Guardians of the Galaxy and Hulk. I mean, there are tones going on. Just the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, which we've all seen and we all enjoy, are very different than Black Panther, which is not that type of movie. It's a little bit different. And he's a different character. So you have to get all these people to play together at once. And regardless of your feelings on superhero movies, it's a pretty impressive feat, you know, what they've done. Think about, okay, we talk about brands, right? And brands that make an unlikely turnaround from, you know, the Audis of the world, what it once was to what it became.
Mm-hmm.
Lego, what Lego once was to know what Lego is now. Banana Republic, you know, it was that weird safari store, and now it's a fine, you know, it's fine clothing for
weird safari.
Yeah, it was. They're the weird. Marvel Comics. If you had said to someone 20 years ago,
Trader Joe's was a weirdo place where it's a, hi, I'm the manager. I'm Captain Jack. You're what? I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Yeah. Welcome aboard. Okay. Where are the potatoes? All right, matey.
We grow our own. They're
like
they
had like weird themes and captain's hats and weird nautical themes.
They're the most profitable grocery store because they built their brand.
I'm sitting there in the hinterlands of Georgia, and they're going, oh, yeah, we got Trader Joe's.
There's everywhere. Right. So think about Marvel Comics 20 years ago. That was for nerds or just a weird. And think about comic book movies 20 years ago. Daredevil and Elektra and Catwoman and The Phantom. These are bad movies. Yeah. And now they are the biggest and honestly well-made movies that come out every year. And they make a ton of money and they're successful. And they have A-list actors in them. That is a crazy feat that I don't think anyone could have predicted 20 years ago. So credit where it's due to, you know, Marvel for creating a universe that did not exist and did not seem like it could exist 20 years ago. It's a feat. I'll play a clip. It reflects a couple things. Number one, how they weave all these stories together. I think they did pretty well in this movie. And also, what I think they did well in the last couple of movies. I don't know if you see Thor Ragnarok. Did you guys get around to seeing
that? No, I heard it was
so good.
Good.
But they finally cracked the code on Thor. He was this boring. He was so boring, I didn't bother seeing the second Thor movie. That was the only movie of these I didn't see. Mm-hmm. He's so boring and stodgy. And they figured it out. They made him fun and interesting and playful. And they played against him being this sort of regal intergalactic godlike creature. So here are the Guardians.
Well, to be fair, the people from his home planet of Backsack.
Asgard.
Hmm?
Asgard is what it's called.
I think you got to Google it. Pretty sure it's Backsack. But either way, he was sort of the class clown of Backsack. Okay. They don't breed him that funny over there. That's all I'm saying.
Well, here is Thor being folded into the story with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They have not previously encountered, so this is bringing them into the whole story. And they're going to find him floating in space. And you're going to feel... It's a well-handled scene because you have these new characters meeting who have different tones, but they manage to find a good fun. And that's another thing. This movie is very fun. They find a good fun way to sort of integrate them.
Group, put that thing away. Now,
didn't
I don't want to tell you
right
again.
Didn't
Group.
Hey, Guru.
All right, Guardians, don't forget, this might be dangerous, so let's put on our mean faces.
What happened?
Wipers! Get it off!
How's this dude still alive?
He is not a dude. You're a dude. This is a man. A handsome, muscular man.
It's like his muscles are made of Kutati metal fibers.
Stop massaging his muscles. Wake him up.
You guys.
So it's a little longer than I wanted, but you get the idea. It's fun. I can't imagine my review is going to influence you one way or the other. You either bought into this series or you have no interest.
Okay, well, here's a question.
It seems I think all these things are doing well and well executed.
And
also, you think about the damn advantage of these movies because my son will see this movie 3 or 4 times and spend my money 3 or 4 times with 3 or 4 different friends, groups of friends. Whereas, like, Phantom Thread, he's only seen once.
Oh, wow.
And that
another terrible superhero.
I'm just saying, like, when you make a movie like that, people see it once, if they see it at all, and they just see it once. They get so much money. I will bet you 40% of their dollars were repeat business. It's insane that you can do this. But so many people saw it on a Friday and saw it again on a Saturday and a third time on a Sunday. Of course, you're just ringing up those numbers. Yeah. Like, the sheer volume of people doesn't need to be nearly as great as the actual take from that week because so many people see it so many times.
And double and triple down.
Right.
Now, if you like this genre, if you're familiar with, like me, I've seen a couple of the movies. They're fun, not really my genre. If I wanted to check this out, would I be completely lost?
That's exactly what I had written down next. It's a good movie on its own. It's a good movie, and you will be able to enjoy it. But it's kind of like if someone had no interest in sports and said, do I need to know a lot about football before I watch the Super Bowl?
Or can I just jump in here on All My Children?
Yeah. Well put.
Thank you.
I would say you could probably enjoy the Super Bowl. It's a sporting event, and you'll get it. But it would certainly greatly enhance your appreciation and enjoyment if you did know the background, because there is so much shorthand there just jumping in right at the end of the story. There is so much background that you're not going to be lost, but you're going to be like, oh, well, I guess that's why he's doing that.
You'll like it on a surface level.
But it is a well-made movie. I actually quite enjoyed this. I think it was my third or fourth favorite of all these movies.
I'll just try to, in case you're going to see it. You got the guy Thor. Mm. He's from Backsack.
Sure.
Then you have the one guy who's like the little tree sapling, and he only says, "I am gay." That's all.
Oh, I didn't realize he was gay.
He says every time they ask him to, like, "Hey, could you help us change his tire?" He just goes, "I am gay."
Okay.
And when they say. They say, like, we're doing a barn raising. He goes, "I am gay."
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Well, he's just a one guy.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So
thank you. Now I feel like I could see it.
Yeah. Well, it'll be easier.
Sure.
It'll have
thank
more
you.
Context.
Right.
I don't know why I wasted all my time in that review. Adam just summed it up perfectly.
Hooray for Bollywood.
It's very well done.
Very well done. What number? Let's just go Rotten Tomatoes, 100 being perfect, and not with their scoring, but. You know what I mean? Not, oh, it's over 60, so blah, 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 when people correct us. But I'm saying, what would you give
it? It's sitting at 84, which surprised me. I thought it was better than that. I would give it 90, 91.
Wow.
Really?
It's a really well-made movie. I cared much more about the characters than I had before. And and this isn't even up my alley.
Were you swept away?
I was lifted. I wasn't swept, but I was lifted.
How long is the movie?
And I think it's 2 hours or a little bit. Chris can look this up.
It's 2.5 hours.
It felt shorter.
That's a lot of movie. All
Chris,
right.
You see it?
Very well.
I loved it.
Yes, he did.
I got the meat sweats from that Meat Lover's Pizza. I was eating it up.
It worked.
Relentless.
And they pulled it off. Well, my point is there probably is such a thing as a Meat Lover's Pizza that I would really love. It's just not the one you get when you're doing a shoot and someone's taking out for the $9.99 Meat Lover's special.
This is a salty mess. This is an artisan big budget movie. This is an artisan $200 million movie.
Let's bring it home.
We did.
Oh, we did. All right. Let me tell you about True Car. MSRP, you might know what it stands for, but what does it mean? Same goes for invoice, list price, dealer price. It all can be confusing. Introducing True Price from True Car. Know exactly what you'll pay, including fees and accessories, before you get to the dealership. You know the True Price is great because True Car shows you what other people pay for the exact same car. Apples to apples. Certified dealers set their True Price competitively, so they can win your business. So they compete amongst each other. So when you're ready to buy and you want to go new or you want to go used, Kalen got his new Honda, sporty Honda from True Car. Max Pata got his Prius from True Car. Sporty Prius. Worst of the Spice Girls, but sensible. You're ready to buy a new or used, you can try True Car. Enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right. You should know Cleveland, Agora Theater, coming up May 17th, one-man show. I'll be there. And Detroit, Royal Oak Theater, May 18th, one-man show. Come on out. Say hi. We're doing live shows. All the other places. You can go to amcurl.com for all that. Nell Scovell is coming in. She's a very decorated writer. Created Sabrina the Teenage Witch, wrote for Letterman and Newhart and Charmed and Monk and The Simpsons. One of my favorite episodes, the Pufferfish episode, the poisonous Pufferfish.
Mr. Burns comes to dinner.
Right.
In that episode, he comes over. Remember, then they serve him the pufferfish.
She'll be in studio, and we'll talk to her right after this.